Okay, and now for the last presentation for this panel, this is Uffe Chapman.
Good enough, yeah.
It's good.
Effe. As easy as it goes, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Effe.
Thank you. Yeah.
Anti-Semitism and Turkey, gone.
Yes. Yeah, the title has changed a little bit. It has become Memorial Conflicts of Europe, but I guess it's fine. It's again, good enough and by approximation. Yeah.
15 minutes.
Wonderful. I know that the only thing between you and lunch now is my paper. It's not the best position to be. So I'll do my best to do this as fast as possible. I'm assuming it will take about 12 to 13 minutes. But before that starts, I need to thank to Ayata Karaca. I need to apologize because I couldn't make it to yesterday's panels. I was supposed to fly from Paris to Berlin early in the morning. I actually bought a ticket for 6:50, but I got delayed and I got exhausted. I wasted my day and missed my panel. You don't have to pity me. I pity myself enough for that. At any rate, yes. And also my apologies for being somewhat too humanistic in this paper. I was trained as a philosopher and a literary critic, which makes me more interested in non-serious matters. I guess yesterday's sessions were reserved for that kind of thing, but mine will be something like adding some flavor to some humanistic flavor to this panel. Okay, it has already been 2 minutes, so I should start. So I will present to you two curiosities that respond to modern-day anti-Semitism, today's anti-Semitism, and at the same time, what was once called the Holocaust industry. We still call it a Holocaust industry, and we don't like it. Most of us like us.
Welcome to joining.
What is that?
Welcome to the history.
I know. Thank you. So the first one... the two curiosities I was saying. The first one is an essay by Klaus Leggevi, great scholar, not known outside Europe, but I guess that's what matters anyways. An essay by Klaus Leggevi on the House of European Memory, a memorial museum due to open in Brussels in 2013. We still have time for that. The second curiosity is a recent book on Ottoman Jews by Mark David Beyer. I think most of you know him too. He's been around for some time now. At least he's been working in Berlin, but at any rate. Leggevi analyzes European memorial practices and explains why the Holocaust as a negative foundational myth for Europe, and we know what it is, right? Why that myth for Europe didn't work at all. How, on the contrary, memory is competing with the memory of the Holocaust today, memory of the Gulag, for instance, feed into new anti-Semitism in the garb of anti-Zionism, he argues. His solution is another anti-Semitism as a negative foundation, but a responsible one, one that allows other memories more visibility so that a more complete community of European memory can emerge. Beyer's book, similarly, offers visibility to what Beyer takes to be a community, the community of Ottoman Jewish converts to Islam. This community has never been visible, because it is a secret community, but the myth of the secret community feeds into Turkish anti-Semitism, a curious phenomenon. Inspired by the myth, this anti-Semitism produced in a number of recent books lists of names of Turkey's secret Jews. And according to these books, secret Jews such as Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Orhan Pamuk rule the modern republic, making decisions for the Turkish people according to their Jewish persuasions. Now, Beyer begins with an explanation of this cultural phenomenon, condemning it, I mean, obviously, as the fruit of some curious form of anti-Semitism. He then continues to analyze the real history of the secret Turkish Jews, in a way that is just as responsibly anti-Semitic as Leggevi. I argue that while Leggevi revises and at times represses history and facts to create a European community of memory, Bayer creates a community to revise and at times repress history and facts. These are two epistemological operations, and very risky ones for that matter too. And in Legevi's work, an aesthetic endeavor, namely the Museum of European Memory, is the object of political analysis. So as a humanist, I have the right to speak about it. There are computing memorial spheres seeking representation in this museum, and these spheres are, obviously, the Holocaust, and then comes the Gulag, or the communist oppression, and then comes the expulsion of the masses within Europe or at its boundaries, such as Turkey. European colonial violence, obviously. Memories of Europe's immigrant populations, which in turn are obviously an extension of European colonial violence and its contemporary forms. And finally, strictly European relics of the two wars of the last century, Serbia being a place where the war began and so on and so forth. And again, this is the final solution, Europe's success since 1950s. So these memorial spheres, in Legevi's description, are concentric circles proceeding out from a central point. Out of these circles, which, as I present to you, make up a pretty gloomy sphere overall, Legevi wants to create and strengthen a community of memory through institutional negotiation. Until one reaches the seventh circle, that is the one reserved for the success of Europe since 1950s, it's hard to understand what Legevi wants to commemorate, since until then he simply describes the shameful European century. But when it comes to the seventh circle, actually the argumentation becomes absolutely circular. And here, Europe looks like a memory stick, this thing that we use to save our documents, to carry our documents from place to place. So what Europe does is to keep record, and what distinguishes Europe from anything else is that it does this right. And it has done this right, especially in the last 50 years. Europe's greatest success is its civil society, Legevi tells us, and its civil servants, such as himself, who keep records. And keep them right, obviously. But these records, to us, for the rest of the world, are at the same time criminal records. And Europe of the last 50 years, Europe of success, defines itself, quite curiously, in opposition to these crimes, even if they were committed by Europeans themselves. Europe defines itself in opposition to its own crimes, Holocaust and colonialism, but also in opposition to, for instance, Israel's crimes in Palestine, in opposition to communism's crimes across the world, and so on and so forth. And obviously in opposition to the Ottomans' crimes for that matter. Europe, at least the Europe of the last 50 years, is not the criminal. And its memory cannot be that of a criminal either, and it is actually not, as expected. With this leg, has one major objection to the European memorial practices of the last few decades, and it is this. Jewish suffering cannot be as central in European memory in the future as it has been so far, he asks. For him, the Holocaust is only a half circle, and it needs to be supplemented by the memory of Gulag to make it full circle. On top of that, Europe needs to keep record of sufferings that are at least as diverse as European people. So, following this argumentation, obviously, Europe, the memory stick, now turns into something else. With this final rhetorical turn, it becomes the savior of memories. It saves even the memories of its victims. But save them from what? Today. Yeah, it saved many things in the past, but today, with Legevi, we are saving those memories from something, and it is the utter visibility, which is to say the blinding reality of the Holocaust. So Europe has to get out of this coming to terms with the past business, Legevi tells us. Europe already has done that, and it has even come to terms with other people's pasts. Europe now has to look into doing something with its comings to terms with pasts. According to this politics, what counts is not historical reality, but what people remember, what brings them together in truth, their actual memories. Memory cannot be controlled mnemotechnically, says Legevi. And Europeans today remember many other things apart from the Holocaust. Hence, we follow the speech, the live breath of the people. That real connection between people is almost flesh and bones. Let's build the politics out of our true bones, Legevi tells us, which is different from the state-sponsored obsession with the Holocaust. With this incredibly risky epistemological operation, Legevi presents us the murderer as the savior. That's the danger. Transformative power of Europe sometimes transforms the murderer into the savior. If the European Memorial Museum indeed buys Legevi's memorial politics, then this educational institution and this educational endeavor in general will sure produce many generations of schizophrenic Europeans. And you have to imagine people walking on the streets thinking that they are memory sticks or something. Obviously, Europe is not a memory stick, nor a savior of memories for that matter. At least, it doesn't appear to be so in our part of the world. That Europe has traditionally stolen, literally stolen, memories and relics can be put aside now, but of course we shouldn't forget Pergamon. Since Legevi wants Europe to learn from the mistakes of Israel, this Israel that doesn't learn anything from Europe's or its own mistakes, and since the pillar of Legevi's argument is a memory of the Jews, we can simply look what Europe appears to be from Israel's Middle East. Now, who can tell Palestinians today that Europe had no role whatsoever in the foundation and the life support systems of Israel? And on the other hand, isn't Israel yet another geography upon which Jews are concentrated in their exclusion from Europe? Didn't history unfold this way? I mean, don't we remember that? After centuries of persecution, expulsion, after creation of one ghetto after another to keep Jews outside, Europe finally managed, only a few decades ago, two generations ago, to push Jews outside Europe, and at the expense of who suffered? Europe has done, and still does, many things in addition to remembering and saving relics. The issue today, as it was yesterday, is not the making of a European community out of flesh, bones, blood, or memory. European community is, practically speaking, out there. The issue today is how to think of European memory responsibly, how to think of European memorial politics with responsibility. So I have 5 minutes, I'm moving faster. From writing history to create a community, this is what Legevi did, we go to creating a community to write history. Please note that in both occasions, what is at stake will be the creation of communities and to separate them from others. This creation involves geographic separation and concentration as well. So Bayer's major thesis in the Dönme is this. There's a community in Turkey of Jews who converted to Islam publicly following their Messiah Sabbatai Sevi in the 17th century, but who remained separate from Muslims as a distinct collective body. This community is not simply Jewish or Muslim. It's not even crypto-Jewish. In between, this community produces its own identity, and they have had agency as a community as well. Bayer develops this thesis in opposition not only to those anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, but also to the traditional Zionist take on this matter, which is to show interest in Sabbatai movement of the 17th century and ignore the modern relics of this history. So this position is neither that of the Zionist, and his position is neither that of the Zionist nor that of the anti-Semite. One major objection to Bayer's argument is, of course, this. But who in the Ottoman Empire was simply Muslim, or simply Jewish for that matter? Well, no one, but this is not enough. Bayer's is an epistemological operation similar to Legevi's, so we have to pay a little bit more attention to that. Bayer admits that it was only in modern times, that is to say, in the late 19th century, that Ottoman Muslim establishment began to perceive these converts as distinct from others. It all starts with a legal conflict. Christian missionaries distributing the Bible in Ottoman Empire were facing real difficulty around this time because they were banned from working with Muslims. And looking for an access point to the Muslim society, missionaries came up with a brilliant idea. They thought that the Jewish converts, Jews who had converted 3 centuries ago, could not be, strictly speaking, Muslim. And hence, the Bible should have been available to them. Because that was what was happening to Jews in Europe, obviously. Even after they converted, they couldn't have been recognized as Christians. With this incident, which is rather tangential to Bayer's argument, the Dönme identity, the convert, the Jewish convert identity, becomes visible for the first time. Bayer fails, and justifiably so, to provide any substantial information or evidence as to the pre-modern existence of this community, and as to the material evidence that he provides for the existence of a communitarian life of the group, it is very ambivalent. The families with this origin, he says, have always lived together, and especially in Thessaloniki, referring to a number of records documenting residential conditions. But when we look closely to the records, we see that across the empire, there always was a correlation between familial bonds and residential choices. Jewish converts had their own mosques, he says, putting emphasis on the words their own, but this leads him to downplay the significance of the word mosque. Bayer shows how converts were connected to other marginal Muslim communities of the empire, but insists on their separation, pointing to their separate history that he traces back to the 17th century, and as I said, without much evidence. But why think of the two centuries preceding modern times as a history of separation and not in terms of reparation? Muslims of the Ottoman Empire were not simply Muslims. Christians of the empire were not simply Christians either. There's no such thing, actually, as being simply Muslim, Jewish, or Christian, and things were even more complicated in the Ottoman Empire, which was an empire of converts. Why not ask the question as how these peoples lived together instead? What did it mean, if it meant anything at all, to live together for the Jews, Christians, and Muslims of them? What did it mean, if it meant anything, to be Muslim in the empire when Jewish converts to Islam, living under the conditions I have described, lived and were recognized as Muslim for centuries? And I would even go so far as to suggest that learning from this history of Muslim collectivity is far better than going to Legevi's on, and Bayer's, for that matter, real, almost flesh and blood through memories of the people. Do I still have a minute? I have showed how Legevi wants to fabricate a community of memory at the expense of history. With a similar operation, Bayer wants to write history and at the expense of the sense of community. Both narratives look for live threads of memory in their operations. In Bayer's case, this live breath of the Jewish community is contrasted with the faulty anti-Semitic conspiracy theories of Turkey. And in Legevi's case, this live breath of the people is opposed to the post-Holocaust politics that have failed not only to destroy anti-Semitism, but also led to a sense of lack of community in Europe. I have drawn enough conclusions and I have given enough implications, I'm assuming, so I hope to draw more hypotheses during our discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much.